Well, my son is coming home with ideas about how people...
I will call the meeting to order.
About how his own mind
people
works.
Are having so much fun in the back that I have a feeling if I don't do that, we're going to be sorry at the end of the meeting.
All of our high schools are having rigorous college prep programs like the International Baccalaureate.
I am a representative, Mindy Greiling, and I'm the chair of the K-12 Education Finance Division in the House of Representatives, and scurrying to his spot is my co-chair for the night, Representative Jim Dabney. And I will be turning it over to him shortly, but let me just say at the beginning a little word about the format and then a word or two about the bill. The format is that we will all introduce ourselves up here, and legislators I know may be coming and going because it's October and there are many meetings going on, and we're always grateful for any who can be here any amount of time. But we will have members introduce themselves, and Representative Dabney will do introductions of any elected officials in the audience. And then our nonpartisan House research person, Tim Strom, will go through a 15 or 20 minute presentation on the bill, the new Minnesota miracle that we're having testimony on tonight. And then we get to our favorite part, which is where we get to hear from you. And then we will end promptly at 8:30. And we will hang around, many of us, afterwards, because always there are some people who like the microphone, like to testify, but there are others who like to talk informally afterwards. So we try to make ourselves available for that as well. But for those who would like to testify, if you could fill out a green card, and the woman in the green in the back, our staff person, Shannon Patrick, has green cards. If you didn't get one and would like to testify, just raise your hand and she can bring you one and then ferry it up here to us. The New Minnesota Miracle is a bill that we legislators can't claim all the credit for, because a lot of people did work on it long before we ever worked on it ourselves. Governor Tim Pawlenty had a task force, actually, that in his first year in office that looked at education finance reform, and it was a broad-based study group, and they came out with some recommendations. And then the school groups and parent groups and education advocacy groups around the state picked up that ball and worked with the PS Minnesota Coalition, the Public School Coalition, to come out with some very strong recommendations and principles that they thought a comprehensive school finance reform bill should have. And then they gave them to the legislators, and then we had a bipartisan Senate, House, Republican, Democrat task force that I co-chaired with Senator Terry Bonnock and also Commissioner Alice Segrin. And at the very end of session, we unveiled the bill that we'll see tonight after hearings were done that could be included in that session. We just got it out there early, so it would be on the Internet, so we could have these hearings and people could figure out what the bill is all about and let us know and give us input. And that's part of what we're doing tonight. We've had hearings all around the state, and we've been up north and southern part of the state and also in different suburbs. And this is our first hearing in a city of the first class, so we're really interested to hear what you have to say. It's also our last hearing before the election. And then we will resume having some more hearings, and then this will be a major topic of discussion during the year. And when we go through the PowerPoint with our staff, he will talk about actually what the bill is. I just want to say one thing, and that is that I always compare it to an Eiffel Tower, because we have different pieces and different proportions for the different types of students, the different types of districts. And it depends on how much we fund it as to how big the Eiffel Tower will be. It could be small, it could be life-size, or it could be anything in between. So I would like to think that liberals and conservatives could all agree on the proportion, and then we could argue during the session on the rate of scaling it in, because it is scalable. And if we put in $100 million, we get a good start. If we put in $700 billion, like Congress has at hand, we'd be doing really well, or anything in between. So with that, I will turn the meeting over to Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we'd like to begin by asking the legislators on the panel to introduce themselves. You all seem so far away. I don't know that we were intended to isolate them, but I do particularly want to thank the three other Minneapolis legislators who are here this evening who do not serve on the K-12 Education Finance Committee, but took time out of their busy schedules to be here this evening to hear your testimony and participate in the process. If you'd like to start by introducing yourselves.
Sure. I'm Diane Lossler. I have the honor of representing Northeast Minneapolis in the Minnesota House.
Hi, I'm State Representative Frank Hornstead. I always feel comfortable on the left side of the stage anyway. But I represent Southwest Minneapolis, and I'm especially happy to be here at South High School, where I had my oldest daughter graduated last year, and my middle daughter is a junior here. So I really appreciate South for hosting this.
I'm Jean Wiginius, State Representative from South Central Minneapolis, and just as Frank had kids here, both of my sons graduated from South High, and I feel privileged to be sitting up here since I have spent so many hours sitting in that audience listening to band presentations or watching plays or whatever. So I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Working down Representative House.
I'm Representative Tim Faust. I'm from Mora. I represent the cities of Mora, Pine City, Braham, Sandstone, Hinckley, and Ogilvie. So about 80 miles straight north of here.
Good evening. I'm Representative Willie Dominguez, representing the north side of Minneapolis and downtown, at least for the end of the year. I see my successors in the audience, Bobby Joe Champion, who's going to be sitting in this seat next in January. I'm glad you're here, Bobby. He's right over here.
Thank you all. And as Representative Greiling mentioned, I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I represent this area in the Minnesota House and actually always have a soft spot for South High because I did my student teaching here quite a while ago. I do want to acknowledge a number of individuals are in the audience. We have three school board members. It's a good thing we stopped at three. If there were four, there'd be legal problems. We have Lydia Lee, the current chair of the school board. Pam, yes, go right ahead. Pam Costain. And Tom Madden is in the audience, yes. And in addition, we're honored to have Superintendent Bill Green present as well this evening. Thank you for coming. I also want to thank all the House staff as well as the Minneapolis district staff who put a lot of efforts into making this hearing happen here in Minneapolis tonight. In addition to the folks I've already mentioned, I note that Lynn Norgren, president of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, is also here this evening representing her staff. Thank you for that. At this time, I would like to turn the microphone over to Mr. Tim Strom. Mr. Strom is nonpartisan staff in the Minnesota House. They're one of the best-kept secrets in Minnesota. The nonpartisan staff serve legislators on both sides of the aisle equally and put in a lot of long hours because after we're done doing whatever it is we do, they have to stick around and clean up after us and write everything that we wanted said in legislation properly. But Mr. Strom will review some recent activity in the last legislative session as well as talk about this legislation. Mr. Strom.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name's Tim Strom. I work for the Minnesota House of Representatives Research Department, and I've been asked to spend about 20 minutes tonight to describe House File 4178 for you and also to give you just a two-minute overview of what happened during the last legislative session. As many of you know, the in terms of the highlights of the 2008 session, as many of you know, the legislature budgets on a two-year or biennial basis. So that means the odd-numbered years are the big years for making financial decisions. This coming year, 2009, will be the major budget year. The even-numbered years are the cleanup years. The legislature works on unfinished issues, on bonding projects, and oftentimes on relatively smaller amounts of finance measures. During the last legislative session, there were a couple of changes that benefited school districts. A few of those are listed on the PowerPoint presentation for you. There are paper copies of these at the back if you're having trouble seeing the slides. Essentially, those changes of significance were adding an additional $51 per student to each district's formula, allowing a one-time fund transfer from district capital accounts to their general fund balance. This was a provision that benefited primarily smaller school districts. Most large school districts don't end up with large accumulations of surplus in specific accounts, but for many of the smaller districts, they do. Then there were a couple of levy changes, property tax levy changes, that the legislature enacted to help some school districts. The first of those increased the lease levy for those districts that need to lease building space. The second was a relatively small but important levy for those districts that lost revenue due to some federal changes to a program called the Local Collaborative Time Study Program. An audit of that program found that the way the state had structured it wasn't meeting the federal requirements. School districts were left on the hook for some of those costs, and this levy allows school districts to repay those funds. And then finally, for school districts with large retirement debts, primarily for those that are in health plans, for retiree health plans, school districts were given the authority to issue bonds called other post-employment benefit bonds and repay those with an annual levy. On the next slide, you can see that for 2010, the fiscal year that starts next school year, the legislature also made a couple of changes, and the biggest of those has to do with a relatively small amount of money, but is going to generate a great deal of discussion over the next couple of years. When the state of Minnesota was created, certain acts of Congress gave to the state land. That land is in something called the Permanent School Fund, and the proceeds from the uses of that property are dedicated to K-12 education. Before the law was changed, that money was simply an offset to other state aids of school districts. So school districts had no real interest in what happened to those lands. This change during the 2008 legislative session now makes that additional revenue to school districts. Our current guess is that that will add about $36 per student to each school district's revenue. That's not the controversial part of it, but the controversial part is that the revenue comes from what's called the Permanent School Fund, and that's primarily based on the logging and mining proceeds that the state receives from its public lands. And so there's going to, I think, be more issues regarding the use of school fund land and regarding the environmental uses of those lands now that that money is going to be directly recognizable as additional aid for school districts. So I'd expect during the next couple of years you're going to hear a lot about the Permanent School Fund. The next two slides talk a little about the background that, or the next slide talks about the background that Representative Greiling mentioned. Work on this bill really began back in 2003 when Governor Pawlenty convened a task force to examine our state school funding system. That task force created something called professional judgment panels, and three different groups of panelists came to some conclusions about where school funding should be. A consultant assisted them, and they presented an initial report about what changes should happen to the school finance system. These changes were rather conceptual, and the governor essentially disbanded the task force after those recommendations were presented. A series of school groups formed an organization called PS Minnesota, and that organization spent the next couple of years working off of the background information that the professional judgment task force presented. What they did essentially was listen to conversations about where the level of school funding should be and listen to conversations about how that school funding formula should be changed. Finally, then, in 2007, the legislature created a task force to further study the issue, refine the PS Minnesota works, and put that into a bill, and that's the bill you have in front of you tonight, which is labeled House File 4178. That document will be retitled when the 2009 legislature convenes. House File 4178 is built on a series of goals. These goals aren't all compatible, but they're all goals that the legislature was reaching for when it designed this bill. Those include establishing an adequate level of funding for all public school students, making the formula more equitable and fair, simplifying the formula, and making the formula scalable so that it could be phased in over a period of time. And the tension in these goals comes from issues such as the simplicity versus the fairness. There may well be very good reasons why some school districts are in need of extra money compared to others, but on the other hand, every additional element that's added to the formula for purposes of providing additional revenue adds some complication back into the system. So these five goals for House File 4178 were what were used to put the program together. The next slide shows some of those characteristics that stem from those goals. And those characteristics included setting the basic formula allowance at a level that's high enough to cover each district's basic instructional costs, fully funding the state's share of special education, increasing the ability for school districts to take care of their facility needs, and restoring some equalization, which has to do with the mix of state aid and local levy in the state's school property tax system. If we look at a few of the formula details, the first and probably one of the more important in terms of simplifying the system is to simplify the way we count students. Right now we go through about 10 steps when we determine how to count a student. We count the student first where they live, then by where they're served. That's called adjusting the student count. Then we weight them by grade level. Students in high school earn more money for a school district than students in elementary school. And then finally, we alter those student counts based on whether or not the districts losing enrollment or not. That pupil count mechanism, many people find is it meets one of those goals. It meets the goal of fairness, but it sure loses on the goal of simplicity. So one of the parts of House File 4178 is to simplify the pupil count and just say that every kid in a school district that goes full-time counts as one student or one pupil. The next part of establishing the formula, which is based on a system not unlike our current system, is to have a basic amount per pupil, sometimes called a formula allowance. This amount is currently $5,124 per pupil. House File 4178 would increase that to $7,500 per pupil. Second, and perhaps quite controversial from a legislative perspective, is that this formula amount would be indexed to the growth in the rate of inflation. There's been longstanding arguments that the legislature and with the executive branch about whether inflation should be added to formulas. Essentially, by adding inflation to a formula, you sort of reverse the current process. Right now, if the legislature wants to increase school funding, it's got to affirmatively act. It's got to adopt a bill that would increase school funding. If the formula allowance were tied to inflation, essentially the legislature would have to act in order to keep that increase from happening, or if the legislature wanted a bigger increase, to increase it beyond that level. In addition to the basic revenue, the next component of the school funding formula is something called compensatory revenue. This is revenue that's designed to balance the funding needs of school districts that serve students from different socioeconomic statuses. We know from a research perspective that socioeconomic status is a good predictor of students in additional need, even though we know that there's no direct relationship between any particular individual student and their socioeconomic status. Our current compensatory formula is referred to as a concentration formula. And this formula essentially has very steep concentration in it. So the higher the number of children who are eligible for free and reduced price meals, the greater the compensatory revenue per eligible pupil. This formula is being modified quite a bit in House File 4178, and much of that concentration is being reduced. Essentially, nearly all the school districts in the state would receive the same amount per free and reduced lunch student, about $2,500 per pupil, 33% of the formula allowance. And then those school districts with a very large concentration of students who are eligible for free or reduced price meals would receive concentration revenue on top of that, up to a maximum of 40% of the formula allowance. One last change that's being made under current law, the compensatory revenue is calculated at the site level. Each individual building has an index determined for that building. There's been some expressions and concerns made at the legislature that some districts may be gaming the system in order to concentrate children of poverty at a particular school because there would be much greater benefit for them under the compensatory formula. In my personal experience, we've never seen a school district want to do that, but nonetheless, what this bill does is change the formula so that it's calculated at the district level. The money would still flow to the sites, but it would remove any incentive for a district to keep a building with a concentrated level of poverty. Our current school finance system has a relatively small funding formula for those students who are English language learners. The words in the statute describe that formula as the Limited English Proficiency Revenue Program. House File 4178 keeps intact the concept of that and increases the funding fairly substantially, about doubling the amount of money that's available for English language learners. Additionally, in 2003, the legislature limited that funding to only the first 5 years of any one student's career in school. This bill would eliminate that and allow the funding to flow for as many years as the student needed limited English proficiency services. The next change is to move that declining pupil unit revenue out of the pupil count and into a categorical formula. Essentially, what it would do is simply say that school districts that are losing pupils would get to use their three-year average revenue of pupils when determining their revenue amount. Essentially, what that means is if you're a growing school district, there'd be no change. If you're a school district that's losing enrollment, you'd be using your three-year average enrollment to calculate this form of revenue. We've had a series of hearings with the committee throughout the state, and certainly the most controversial part of the bill from the hearings perspective has been the formula called Location Equity Index Revenue. And what this name represents is a formula that's based on the cost of living in each county within the state. Every school district's revenue would be adjusted based on what the cost of living is in the county where that school district falls. Under the current index, there are only 7 counties that have a cost of living and wage index higher than 1.0. Those happen to be the 7 county metro areas. The formula allowance would essentially provide an amount that averages about $370-some extra for those school districts that are located in metropolitan areas. In terms of the small school districts, Minnesota's school districts are split between a few very large school districts and many very, very small school districts. About 80 of our 340 school districts currently qualify for something called sparsity revenue. This is additional operating revenue for these districts that are both geographically isolated and have small student populations. Under the current formula, there's a series of calculations that are made, but one of those relies on the distance to the next nearest school building. That amount, that distance, which is currently 19 miles for an elementary building, is lowered to 15 miles under House File 4178. There are a couple reserves or set-asides that are created as a part of House File 4178. The first and largest of these is called innovation revenue. Out of that $7,500 per pupil that every school district receives, they would need to reserve 1.5% of that revenue in a fund for particular innovative purposes. The school districts would be allowed to develop their research-based methods for allocating that funding, methods that were designed to increase student academic performance. However, if a district's not meeting adequate yearly progress under the No Child Left Behind laws, the district would have to work in consultation with the Department of Education in order to develop their plan for spending that money. In addition to that, a couple other reserves are created. For gifted and talented programming, $75 or 1% of that $7,500 per pupil would need to be reserved. A half a percent or $37 per pupil would be reserved for career and technical programs, and the existing reserves for staff development, basic skills, and operating capital would remain in place. There are a number of small categories of our current funding system that would be eliminated under House File 4178. Those include eliminating the training and experience revenue, the equity revenue, a revenue that's transition revenue, which is just a nice name for a grandfathered amount of revenue, a pension offset that was put in place during the 1990s, the current categorical formula for gifted and talented, and perhaps the more controversial of these eliminations is the revenue stream for the QCOMP program. There's also an offset to each district's operating referendum. As people in Minneapolis are aware, your school district's going to be asking the voters for a referendum this fall. Part of what House File 4178 does is try and set the basic level of funding high enough to cover the basic instructional needs so that referendums are for only the additional things, the add-ons, as it were. This is accomplished in part by increasing that basic formula allowance and also by taking each school district's referendum and taking $500 off of that referendum and adding it to each district's basic formula. So if you, for instance, are a school district with a referendum of $1,000 per pupil, you'd have your referendum reduced by $500, and that same amount would be added back in state aid instead of coming from the referendum property tax. That same $500 would be added back to the basic formula. If you were a district with no referendum, which is the case for about 10% of the districts in the state of Minnesota, that $500 would just be additional aid for each district. But for those districts with large referendums, essentially it would be $500 per pupil of property tax relief, as that money would just move from the referendum column to the basic aid column. In terms of our special education program, Minnesota has a formula that suggests first that each school district should receive 68% of their special education salary costs. However, the state also caps that formula so that the full amount is not paid out to school districts. Rather, the capped amount is paid to school districts. The cap grows, the difference between the 68% and the cap is growing each year. The 2007 legislature put about $400 million into the special education area over and above base, but that still wasn't enough to eliminate that problem. As a result, the House File 4178 would simply remove that cap, and district special education revenue would be the 68% of its eligible costs. In terms of pupil transportation, two changes are made. In 1995, the legislature eliminated categorical funding for pupil transportation. This wasn't a partisan fight between the Democrats and the Republicans, but rather a fight between the House and the Senate. The Minnesota Senate at that point in time thought that there would be much more sense for school districts to have the money in the general fund and have school districts decide whether or not to spend that money on transportation. What House File 4178 does is propose two new transportation formulas, both of them cost-based. The first of those would allow a school district to define a hazardous pupil transportation area. It could be hazardous because of traffic conditions or safety conditions, and allows the school district to receive a state aid of up to 20% of its to and from school transportation costs. My expectation is that nearly all districts would define hazardous transportation in a way so that full 20% of their to and from school transportation costs would be funded through that aid. And then secondly, school buses have been getting older since the state eliminated its bus purchase levy in 1995. The average fleet in the state is now about 3 years older than it was in 1995. House File 4178 adds back a bus purchase aid amount equal to 5% of a district's total transportation costs, and for those school districts that contract for transportation services, they'd receive the same 5%. It would be up to the district to work with their bus contractor to determine how that money were used. In terms of school facility needs, a couple of changes are made. The first of those has to do with deferred maintenance. Currently, Minneapolis and the other large school districts in the state are allowed to do deferred maintenance without going to the voters. The school board has the authority to determine how to maintain the facilities, and deferred maintenance needs can be met through the sale of bonds and the annual levy to repay those bonds. Only the largest school districts in the state have that authority under current law. This bill would expand that authority to all 340 school districts in the state so that the school boards could do deferred maintenance without going to the voters. Secondly, we have a current program for relatively property-poor school districts called the Debt Service Equalization Aid Program, and that's designed to help school districts with low tax bases afford new school buildings. The House File 4178 made two changes to that formula. The first of those is to increase the amount of the state aid guarantee, which means that for low-value districts, they'll be getting a larger share of state aid for their building bonds. And the second change has to do with agricultural lands. As you may well know, agricultural lands have increased in value very substantially over the last 10 years, and many small rural school districts now find it impossible to build a new building because the majority of that tax will fall on agricultural land. So the bill provides a 66% credit for any tax on the building tax that would fall on ag lands. Essentially what that means is if the farmer were to receive a bill for $10,000 for the building bonds, 66% of that would be paid for by the state. The remainder would be paid by the ag lands. Those changes to the school facility needs are also coupled with a change to the health and safety levy to add more state resources to that program. House File 4178 spends about $2.5 billion in state aid. $2.1 billion of that are for the revenue programs for school districts, and another $400 million of that is for property tax reductions. That's a net of $400 million for the property tax reductions. The biggest share of that comes from reducing the operating referendums that districts have passed. That $500 swap to the regular formula saves several hundred million dollars in property taxes, and other changes, including increasing the equalization levels and reducing the levies for operating capital, the equity program, the transition program, and the QCOMP program, end up eliminating a total of $600 million of property tax. But then we think on the deferred maintenance needs, districts will add back about $200 million of levy there. So we're expecting a net reduction in property taxes of about $400 million under House File 4178. The next couple of slides you don't need to spend any time on tonight. The first of those just shows the amount of each of the changes by component, in case you're interested on how much additional money is put in compensatory or in the LEP formula or how much additional money is in the location equity index. You can see that on that chart there. And then there's a list of some online resources, and those resources include some printouts. There was one in your packets tonight that's on landscape paper, on 14-inch paper, that shows how each district's revenue changes. You can look up and down that list and see how your district's revenue changes compared to other districts. And then if you go to the online site, there's a calculator there, and you can look at the specifics for each school district. So if you want to see why your district only went up 23% while the neighboring district went up 25% or vice versa, you can look at the specifics and look at each of those revenue calculations and see where you're different from the state average. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's a real quick overview of what's in House File 4178.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. During Mr. Strom's presentation, we were joined by another Minneapolis legislator, Representative Mulery, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Joe Mulery. I represent the north half of North Minneapolis, roughly the Patrick Henry District. I'm sorry I'm late, but Congressman Ellisman had a voting rights forum also tonight, trying to be in two places, and I'm carrying a bill on that, so I wanted to go to part of that. But thank you.
Thank you for joining us. As Chair Greiland explained earlier, if you wish to testify this evening, there are green cards in the back of the room to sign in with, and those will get passed up to me. I've already got a nice stack of people eager to testify. We will ask, to the best of people's ability, to hold your comments to 3 minutes to allow as many people to testify this evening as possible. We will, as Chair Greiland said, be finishing promptly at 8:30. So as a strategy to move things along as quickly as possible, I'll not only introduce the person scheduled to testify, but also the person in the on-deck circle so that they can be positioned to come forward as quickly as possible. Our first testifier this evening is Peggy Ingeson, Chief Financial Officer for the Minneapolis Schools, and on deck is Dr. Phil Davis, President of Minneapolis Community and Technical College. Ms. Ingeson, thank you very much and welcome.
Thank you, Rob, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, and members of the committee and others. I wanted to just applaud the efforts of reform, and I'm going to make a couple of comments because our deputy superintendent, Bernie J. Johnson, had planned to make some comments, but just couldn't be here tonight. But I just wanted to tell you a little bit about some of the reform that we've been working on in our district, and I think that you each have a copy of our progress report. We've been working pretty aggressively with our district partners, strategic planning efforts, and this is
the first report out on our progress, and we've set pretty aggressive targets for student achievement and changes that really focus on the classroom and measuring the progress annually. There are some successes that we are seeing here. In particular, wanted to put emphasis on the first slide here talking about our graduation rates. We improved our graduation rates from the baseline year and actually exceeded and surpassed the target that we had set. And in fact, six of the seven Minneapolis comprehensive high schools have met the 80% goal set by the state for graduation rate standard. And in addition, what is particularly encouraging is because we talk a lot about the achievement gap in Minneapolis, the students of color are all seeing improvements in line with this rate. There's a couple of other charts that show some of the areas where we had, in particular, set this one shows the rates by race, where we saw improvements with all of our major groups. The one thing to just put some emphasis on, and I appreciate the overview of the proposed legislation, is that we have some particular challenges in our district, and the difference is that we have to move faster and farther than most other districts because of the makeup of our student population, where we need to be making more than a year's progress in a year for our students. There are a couple of other outcomes that are predictors for a student's achievement, future academic achievement, and we have a little bit more work to do on those. And one is the third grade reading MCA test. And as you can see, we know that we can do better than this, that we set a target and didn't make as much progress as we had hoped. But we have, as you'll see as part of our strategic plan, a lot of initiatives that, a lot of direction that provides more effort on things such as literacy coaches. In addition, the eighth grade math, we saw a 1% increase, but again, not enough to make our target rates. And also, though, there's statewide, there was actually a decline in the eighth grade math scores. So we feel that at least we made a slight movement here, but we know we have a lot more to do. And it is part of that progress report in your packet. You'll see some of the specific efforts that we have underway. I wanted to talk just a little bit with you about the maybe about the makeup of our students and why I know that you, because I've heard a lot of this as we've been going out and getting questions from people as part of the community about the referendum that we're asking voters in the district to support. And because there's a large portion of the citizens in Minneapolis that don't have connections to the schools or students in our schools, particularly getting a lot of questions where people look at, for example, the total number of students in the district and divide by the total dollars, or they'll look at the total number of teachers in the school and divide the number of teachers in the district by the total number of students and say you should probably have class size of 1 to 10. And I wanted to talk about a couple of the things, the makeup of our students, and in particular you talked some in the reform proposal about compensatory aid, where now there's a formula that provides for concentrations of poverty by school, more funding to schools. And I wanted to show a couple of charts here, in particular the math and reading charts here, where you can see the relationship between achievement and poverty, and really just kind of describe that in fact there are two-thirds of our students qualify for free and reduced price lunch, and there's a chart in a couple more charts back that shows how that compares to the state average. And both with the math and reading scores here on the next chart, you can see that there's a relationship between the poverty and achievement, that we think that it makes a difference, the resources that we can put into these areas in order to make the gains that we need to make in student achievement. I think the next chart shows, there's the reading one, and again you can see that we have some strategies, as you can see from our magnet schools, some places where we have outliers from the traditional and a couple of schools that I should mention in particular, Loring and Lindale, where we have had schools be very successful in beating the odds. And have very high concentrations of poverty, but have made stronger gains in achievement. And just the next chart shows a little bit about the makeup of Minneapolis student population compared to the state averages. And in particular, you can see that that first one related to poverty, the number of students that are eligible for free and reduced lunch, it's more than twice the statewide average. And as we see that relationship between achievement and poverty, we know that there's justification for more resources there. Also, when we talk about the English language learners and those students, and again see the efforts at the reform that's being proposed in the new bill, that Minneapolis has roughly three times the statewide average of these students. And then I wanted to talk in particular about special ed and recognize the efforts that the legislature made in the 2007 session to really put more funding to special education. And I, again, know a little bit about the challenge of trying to, the competing interests as part of the state budget overall, and in fact know that the history would show that the health and human services portion of the budget, because of the mandated programs and entitlement programs, is a faster growing portion of the budget than education and is taking a bigger share of the budget. And I would just suggest that because of the special ed costs are for the in large part mandated services, we have a similar situation where these the cost for these programs should probably be treated similar to the health and human services entitlement programs. And in particular, I know that I don't have to, because you hear a lot about the special ed cross subsidy, and that increase in special ed funding in the 2007 made a pretty significant dent in getting at the cross subsidy that Minneapolis faces. But it because of the way that the funding is and the formulas, that we move quickly again to that same trajectory scale on the graph where the special ed cross subsidy will grow again quite quickly. So appreciate the fact that the reform proposal includes efforts there. I wanted to just close and allow others to speak, but I think I wanted to again also show you that there are some things that we're doing as we understand that we do get more resources than most other districts in the state per student, but want you to understand that we're trying to focus those efforts on the classroom and in particular supporting principal and teacher leadership where we know that this makes a really big difference. We're providing full-time coaches in every elementary school to work on the reading skills because we know that third grade reading is a very important measure, as well as we've adopted a new math program so that we can have all of our students ready for algebra at eighth grade. So thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Ingerson. Dr. Davis, and in the on-deck circle, Paul Wolfing. Welcome, Dr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just want to point out that if you'd like to see Tilly Webster's rhinoceros, she has it in her purse at the back of the room. It's worth seeing.
All right.
I'm Phil Davis, the president of Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk a little bit about a partnership between the Minneapolis Public Schools and MCTC, a partnership that is ensuring that students who graduate from high school can go on and be successful in college. It's a program called The Power of You, and it began in 2006, shortly after the Citizens League produced this report called Trouble on the Horizon, which pointed out that if nothing changed, the students who were then in the ninth grade, of 100 students, only 3% of African-American and American Indian students and 5% of Latino students would be by the time they were 25 earn a college degree in Minnesota. Now, with students of color representing such a significant portion of the students here in Minneapolis and as well in St. Paul, MCTC, together with its sister institutions, St. Paul College and Metropolitan State, and with their school districts, decided something needed to change. And so we created a program that we thought would overcome the real and perceived barriers to participating in college, a program called The Power of You. Simply put, it proposed that if you graduated from high school and wanted to come on to college immediately following, the fall following, you could come to one of our institutions tuition-free for 2 years. Now, most of the students who were eligible for this program could already attend college tuition-free because most students, as you've seen just a moment ago, qualified for Pell Grants, which would provide for their tuition and fees to be paid for. But people, frankly, didn't believe it. And so working with the public schools to help get the word out with the programs like Achieve Minneapolis, we reached back to parents and to children in school, kids in school, and said, you know, college is not only possible, it's essential. And as it says right behind you, every child college ready. Every child ready to get the skills they're going to need to go out into the workforce. So working with Minneapolis Public Schools, with the city of Minneapolis, with Achieve, we've been able to reach into the school, talk with students, make sure they understand what college is like, that it's possible, that there's resources available for them to be successful and to attend. And just last month, Wilder Research released its report on the first 2 years of the program, and to say it's been a success would be an understatement. In the first 2 years of this program, we doubled the number of high school graduates who went on to college at MCTC, St. Paul College, and Metropolitan State. 72% of these students were low-income students. 65% or more were students of color. Now, that's a 115% increase in low-income students attending college and a 150% increase in students of color going on to college just in the first 2 years. 8 in 10 of the students told Wilder researchers that their decision to go to college was based on the power of you. And most importantly, power of you students are succeeding. And they're succeeding at rates substantially higher than their traditional cohort peers. So I won't spend a lot more time. I know you have a lot of people who want to talk about this bill, but I do think it's worth pointing out that as is happening here in Minneapolis, no one institution can make this happen for students. It takes a collection of institutions like the Minneapolis Public Schools, like the City of Minneapolis, like MCTC and Achieve Minneapolis, and others to make this happen. But I think you can see what can happen if we give our students the tools for success. So thank you very much for hearing from me. And again, don't miss Tilly's rhinoceros.
Thank you, Dr. Davis. Before Mr. Rolfing comes up, we've been joined by another Minneapolis legislator, Representative Kahn, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
My name is Phyllis Kahn. My district is mainly on the south side of Minneapolis, but I also have, southeast part of Minneapolis, but I also have the Cedar Riverside area, and a lot of the students from my neighborhood do come from the south side.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Also, I'd like to recognize Claudia Fuentes from Mayor Ryback's office has also joined us. Thank you for coming this evening. Mr. Rolfing, if you could come forward, and on deck is Arthur Taylor. Mr. Rolfing, thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Paul Rolfing, and I am a proud graduate of the Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm a house homeowner in Minneapolis and Representative Dabney's district, and I'm a parent of a 2-year-old who will be a member of the Minneapolis Public Schools class of 2024. And like so many people in this room tonight, I'm working very hard to pass the Strong Schools, Strong City referendum to support our Minneapolis Public Schools. And I wanted to say tonight that we shouldn't have to be going to our fellow citizens to ask for this money. These dollars are from an excess levy, which that's the term that state statute gives to it. But there's nothing excess about dedicating resources to fundamentals like early reading, getting kids ready for algebra by eighth grade, and helping to buy down class sizes so teachers can do their jobs. We know that there are methods that we can employ in Minneapolis that will work. We just don't have the dollars to do them for as many kids as need them. So we're going out in this election season, door to door, phone call by phone call, neighbor to neighbor, asking people to raise their taxes. Raise their taxes at a time when our global economy is in crisis and people's budgets are stretched thin. And I have to tell you, the response that we're getting is overwhelmingly positive. When we have those conversations about the value that schools bring to our neighborhoods, about the value that they bring to our homes, and about what it means for our workforce and the future of our city if we invest in our kids, and what it means if we don't, people are strongly supportive, and they want to make that investment. They'd rather make that investment than sending their dollars somewhere else like Wall Street, where they're not sure if it will make a difference. So we are having that conversation, and it is working. And I think the secret piece of the conversation tonight about this bill, which can do many good things to help fund our schools, including take away some of this money that we'd rather not be paying in our property taxes. One of the things that we're not talking about is how to pay for these improvements. And I think it really comes down to how you as legislators are able to talk to your constituents and to help mobilize us to have this conversation person to person all over the state, because that's what it's going to take. We have to be able to have an honest conversation about the things we value and the things that can make a difference for our future. And, you know, the challenges we're facing in Minneapolis with students in poverty, students who are speaking the 90 different languages that are here in our school district, these are challenges that all the demographics projections say are coming to all districts throughout the state. If we can't figure out how to meet these challenges here in Minneapolis, we have serious problems for the future of our whole state. So we're going to vote yes on November 4th for our referendum. We hope you and the people who support you can be effective in reaching out all over the state to make real improvements to the way we fund our schools. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a series of students, I'm pleased to report. Mr. Taylor is up now, followed by Kendrick Hall. Mr. Taylor, welcome.
Thank you. First off, I'll be speaking on behalf of Timothy Nelson, a former student of Minneapolis Public High Schools. He wrote this. In June of 2003, I ended a 10-year academic career with the Minneapolis Public Schools with my graduation from Washburn High School. This transition represented more than just the communication onto post-secondary education, but also transformation of self that I believe was only possible due to the positive influence and resources I had during my time as a student in Minneapolis Public Schools. The condition of my personal and family life during these years were oftentimes chaotic and unhealthy, for I found refuge through my continuing involvement in extracurricular activities that were offered by both schools I attended, as well as the Student Activities Department. These programs were essentially priceless for a young boy like myself who often found few places to turn during such stressful time in my life. Through my involvement, I gained the inspiration needed to work hard and set academic goals for myself. It was only because of programs like Citywide Student Government, Mayor's Youth Council, district-wide competitions, and others that I learned the true nature of my own potential. This realization, in turn, fostered a greater interest in looking at college as a realistic goal. Over the last 5 years, I managed to work a part-time job at a hotel and attend college full-time simultaneously, as well as stay involved in volunteer programs, advocacy groups, and other organizations. In May of 2008, I am very proud to announce that I graduated from Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with a BA in sociology. Words cannot express what this accomplishment means for someone that questioned if such a feat was even possible. I can now say that I know it was from the experience, support, and knowledge I received while being a student in Minneapolis Public Schools that I credit this accomplishment. I have recently began a new career in hospitality management, and soon I will be working towards certification with the American Hotel and Lodging Educational Institute as I look towards the future. That's a former student from Washburn, Timothy E. Nelson, but me, Arthur Taylor, I could attest to a lot of what he is saying. Being a student here at South High School, I know because of extracurricular activities such as citywide student councils, I have been privileged to have done a lot of things that I know wouldn't be possible without such programs. I know for a fact that having dinner or eating pizza with Dr. Green and RT, that's a privilege that a lot of schools and the students in different districts don't really get. A lot of students in other districts don't know who their superintendent is, couldn't tell you their mayor's name, and to have the privilege to actually sit down and talk to them about issues that are going on inside our schools, that means a lot to me because I know that my voice is actually being heard. So I would just like to say these different extracurricular activities and programs really is a positive thing for the youth. It gives those kids, especially underprivileged kids, something to reach out to when family isn't there and when school isn't where they would like it to be. And thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hall, followed by Michael Young Harris. Looks like Roosevelt's in the house.
Would it be all right if we speak in a group since we're all from Roosevelt?
I'm sorry, sir.
Would it be all right if we speak in a group? We're all from Roosevelt.
Come on forward. Good to have you here. Thank you. The procedure is you should each identify yourself when you speak for the tape. We do tape. This is a formal hearing, and the tapes actually go to the Minnesota Historical Society.
Okay.
So as each of you speaks, if you'd simply identify yourself. Thank you. Pick whoever's going to start and begin.
Hi, I'm Kendrick Hall. I go to Roosevelt High School. I'm a senior. And what I think, there's, teachers that, really make us, work hard. They really want us to, work hard to go somewhere, because I'm nervous a little bit. But
that's all right.
Yeah,
We don't fight.
There's some students that, teachers know that, you can push yourselves, and, you can really work hard, you can go somewhere, and, getting these activities and everything started with students, like Pam, with the student government and everything, it really helps us, put ourselves out there and get to, do things, a lot of things we would like to do, if we didn't have that, I think, we wouldn't, have anything to do or do anything, or, I don't know. Just nervous.
All right.
Hi. Here you go.
Michael Young Harris. I think that the support system that we have in the Minneapolis schools, it helps us a lot, being able to play football or citywide student government, student council, National Honor Society, yearbook committee. I think the money that y'all give us is good, but, giving us more money will help us out more. And I think that being in Minneapolis Public Schools is more diverse than we get ready for the real world. And
how about AP?
Get up here, Brittany.
My name is Brittany Aparicio. I think how we have, Admission Possible, I think that's a good program, how it gets us ready for our ACT test. And I think in the school year, every Saturday you come and you take a test and you take a practice test and they give you the results every Saturday, the first Saturday of the month or something like that. I think student government is good because it gets you involved and you learn more about the community and you help your school more and it gets your school out there. I think our sports programs are good, keeps kids out of trouble, keeps them occupied and gets them out there. And Kendrick Hall got Player of the Week when we played, who was it, North? We played North and he got Player of the Week. And what? Oh, an Academic All-Star. Forgot about that.
Very good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right. Thank you all for being here this evening. I'd like to invite Barb Grasovich. I'm sure I did that badly. My apologies to forward, and on deck circle is Lynn Nordgren. I'd also like to acknowledge we've been joined by City Council Member Cam Gordon. Council Member, thank you for being here this evening.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you.
During the past 35 years, I have had the privilege of working in the Minneapolis Public Schools with the most amazing students in my special ed and Title I classes. For over 15 years, I have been fortunate to work with a stable group of creative and dedicated teachers at Parkview Montessori. The emotional and instructional support we provide each other has created a wonderful learning environment for both adults and children. I have always had an immense respect for an administration that supports its teachers with opportunities for leadership roles, current materials, and staff development. Because of many years of training, teachers know that they are accountable for student progress, they know data drives instruction, and they know that the quality of teacher instruction has a direct impact on student growth and achievement. Teachers desperately want to provide this quality of teaching, but in the last years, the job of teaching has become so difficult that I see teacher morale become low and time for curriculum preparation severely reduced. Class size is the greatest concern that teachers have reported to me. It is too large. Kindergarten, first, second, and third grade classrooms have as many as 29 students, and in fourth, fifth, and sixth classrooms, as many as 35 students. In many of these classes, over half of the students are over a year behind grade level. Individualizing instruction is nearly impossible. Whether it's special ed students, regular education students, English language learners, and especially gifted and talented students. Teachers may have new technology, large media centers, current textbooks, and the best curriculum support materials available. However, without additional people in the classroom to support the curriculum, student achievement will continue to suffer, and unfortunately, closing the gap will be an unrealized dream. Students who are highly mobile, students with diverse needs and learning styles, below grade level skills and behavioral issues need people, not materials. Teachers like me care passionately for their students. They know that students will be the most successful when teachers have increased planning time, lower class size, and support staff in each classroom. The children in Minneapolis deserve this. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn Nordgren, and then on deck I have Dane Smith.
Barb Gurevich, I just want to tell you, has been one of our best teachers for 33 years. She is extremely dedicated, so her words ring true tonight. Greetings. I'm Lynn Nordgren, and I am the president of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, and I am here representing the thousands of teachers who are at home tonight getting ready for tomorrow's work. It is both with excitement and bated breath that I stand before you tonight. The excitement I feel comes from the fact that we are finally having a serious and authentic conversation about educational reform, education, public education reform, and the underfunding that has gone on for too long. The cost of government mandates and much-needed services to our students has financially strangled our school district and has caused us to turn on each other. We get mad at each other when cuts are made, when programs are cut, resources are lost, and people get severely reduced in their jobs or completely eliminated. So know that there's not necessarily a light at the end of the tunnel here tonight, but there's a tunnel. And we're all in it. And I'm glad that you're now here in it with us. And the hope is that we're getting some confidence here by hearing what you propose tonight, and that the light will soon be there, that we're on the track and we're going to see a light pretty soon. My bated breath is due to the fact that I know how much courage and perseverance this takes, and how much it will take to move this agenda forward. These are not easy efforts, especially in light of our current national calamity, if you want to call it that. But we believe in you, and we stand behind you, and we thank you for being here tonight. Please know that you are appreciated. Even though you may not get the phone calls or the emails from everybody who does appreciate you, you are appreciated. One might even be able to use the word heroic if the educational funding reform actually happens. So many thanks to you. You're in the tunnel and on the right track, and we're happy to have this opportunity here tonight to say this to you and to be here with you so that our voices may be heard, the voices of thousands of teachers and educational professionals who stand up every day to do their best for the students and families in Minneapolis. Now you are standing up as well on behalf of these same students and families. We hope that these discussions will continue and that we can work together collaboratively with all the stakeholders to build a brighter and stronger future for all Minnesota children and communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Before Mr. Smith comes up, I will say we've only got a couple of cards left. If you've always wanted to testify to a legislative hearing and never had the chance before, tonight's your night. So I would urge you to pull your thoughts together and look to testifying. Mr. Smith, thank you. And then the last card I have is Brittany Aparicio, a Roosevelt student. Mr. Smith, welcome. Please state your name for the table. That's what I think.
Representatives Greiling and Dabney, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm Dane Smith. I'm the president of Growth and Justice. We are an economic think tank based here in the Twin Cities. I like to cut to the chase. I like to describe us as practical and progressive, pro-Minnesota, pro-government, and get this, pro-business. We believe that economic justice should not be at the expense of economic growth. In fact, we think the former is a precondition of the latter, and that's worked for Minnesota. We do policy research and analysis and advocacy around the idea of ample and smart public investment. We think that government has a valuable and proper role. We are strong believers in public education. And if I would offer one word in response to our view of the new Minnesota miracle and this HF 4178, it would be bravo. We wholeheartedly support the principle of more investment in this absolutely crucial economy-building function of public education. We recently did some research that showed you hear a lot of nonsense about spending for public education being a black hole. This is total nonsense. We've done some recent research that shows a $1 million lifetime payback for changing the status of a human being from being a high school dropout to having some measure of higher education by the age of 25. That's a $1 million payback over the life of that person. And this comes from higher income, demonstrated in study after study, higher taxes paid to the state, and dramatically reduced costs for things like prison and social welfare programs. We stand with you, and in behalf of the idea of a new Minnesota miracle, and aggressively making the case that we are on the wrong course. We have underfunded and disinvested in our schools. I just today looked at the price of government figures, which is a now accepted number for the actual cost of government in our state. This is a measure that was promoted by the business community more than some 20 years ago and has now become accepted. Our total, we like bottom lines at Growth and Justice. Our total investment in public education will fall to about 4% of our income. projected in about 2009-2010. That's a full percentage point from 10 or so years ago. This is on the order of $1 billion to $2 billion to $2.5 billion less. So when you get the response, as you inevitably will, that this is a staggering sum and that this is an unbearable amount, you need to be conscious of these numbers, and we'll be happy to help you make that case. Finally, currently we are developing our own model called Smart Investments in Minnesota Students that will advance research-based, evidence-based interventions for improving student performance along the entire continuum, from birth through college or through some higher ed attainment. And we have a similarly bold goal of increasing that attainment rate in this state by a whopping 50%. Only about 50% of our young people now have some sort of higher ed by the age of 25. We think, and we must get that to 75%. We think this proposal, which is different from the new Minnesota Miracle in many respects, it includes time before K and after 12, is nevertheless very complementary to it, and we look forward to working with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Brittany Aparicio, I believe, was the young woman with the two gentlemen from Roosevelt earlier. Pam Costain, Minneapolis School Board. Pam.
Good evening, members of the committee and representatives from Minneapolis. I wasn't intending to speak tonight, but since there's time, I'm going to do so. I'm a member of the Minneapolis School Board, and I want to let you know that we are in the midst of major reform in the city of Minneapolis and in our school district. And we undertook a really bold move last year when we adopted a strategic plan. And we said that every child would be college ready in Minneapolis. And we said that children would be ready for kindergarten, that they would be reading at grade level by third grade, that they would be taking algebra by eighth grade, and that they would be taking college courses, college advanced course, college oriented courses in high school. And we said that it is no longer acceptable in this city or in this state that we allow so many children to fail, particularly children of color. And we set ourselves on this course, and we mean it. No excuses. We're going to do our part. But I'm coming before you tonight because we can't do it alone. We cannot simply do this alone. We know we've got to invest in human capital. We know we've got a big task ahead, but we've got to have the resources to accomplish this task. And I'm working really hard right now for the Minneapolis Schools referendum. I'm working on it, you know, pretty much 20, 30 hours a week. And it is unacceptable in a country as rich in people and resources and ideas as we have in the United States, that we go begging for money for our schools. And I want to so support you to have the strength to invest in children, to invest in the future, and to really begin to set a different value system for our nation. I feel really proud in Minneapolis right now that I'm part of a city that says it is going to care about its children and it's going to ensure their success. And I want to feel like I'm part of a state that does that as well. A state that says children are our most precious resource. That's the value of this state, and we're going to put our money behind it. So I really applaud your effort. I hope we're all successful in getting additional funds and a better formula for children, and that we really begin to reorient our state back to what I think its proud history was, which is an education state that cared about kids and cared about the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Costain. Our last speaker of the evening is Lydia Lee, the current chair of the Minneapolis School Board. Ms. Lee. Oh, well, sneaking in. Very good. Okay. Welcome, Ms. Lee, and on deck is Carla Bates.
Ah, all right. Well, good evening, and thank you for being here, representatives, Madam Chair and Sir Chair. I think that, you know, a couple of things I want to point out is that we would like this education funding reform to reflect what's needed statewide, not just for Minneapolis. This is a situation where all of us are facing the challenge, some kind of challenge. And so we want to feel like it's not about, oh gosh, there's Minneapolis again wanting more money for in their situation when here we are struggling as well. I mean, this really is about the whole state, and I support every district in this state getting their fair share for what they need to give every student in the state a quality education. You know, every student in every district should benefit from this. I also want to place this in a global context because we hear so often we need to prepare our kids for the global economy. And so at the same time, you know, while we're trying to do more, you know, we hear, oh, well, we have to do more with less. Well, I'm really sick and tired of hearing that. We need to do more with more. You know, we need to be able to provide a quality education in this competitive society. And, you know, I refer sometimes to my experience having visited some Swedish schools a couple years ago. They take care of their children. They take care of their schools. They fund those education programs. Yes, they're taxed to death, but those people get so much for their tax dollars. Translating, you know, from the euro to the U.S. dollar is really difficult right now to make comparisons, but, you know, they get at least twice as much money per pupil than we do. And one of the things, you know, talk about the global experience is that they provide all the money for the expenses and costs for every high school student to take a two-week trip abroad. Those students are, you know, just traditionally, just casually, just routinely travel to other countries. They get the global experience. They get that perspective that so many, many of our adults here don't even have. It's about the resources. I mean, when we have those teachers from Sweden come to visit Minneapolis because we have the sister city relationship with Uppsala, you know, they come and their schools pay for all of their expenses. Here, when our delegation from Minneapolis goes to visit them, we pay from our own pockets. All right, now what are we learning? We're learning a lot, but should we have to be paying for that ourselves? I really haven't doubted. But, you know, I just, you know, want to just kind of emphasize that point is that we're trying to do so very much. You know, as Director Costain said, we've got some really aggressive goals, and it's really going to be hard to achieve any of those without the proper funding. Chief Ingerson started out tonight by showing some of the data where we did not meet some of our targets. Well, you know, first of all, we're very early in the process, and I think those goals were extremely aggressive considering we were still laying the foundation for preparing to get our kids to be college ready. But, you know, it is truly about money. I know people don't like to think about the fact that everything has a dollar sign attached to it, but it's true. And, you know, we would really appreciate that this state could lead the country in saying education really, really is important to us, and we're going to fund it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Carla Bates, and then Alan Hancock on deck. Ms. Bates. Welcome. Please state your name for the take.
Yeah, hi. I'm Carla Bates. And I guess I live under a little gray cloud, the economics, dismal science that it is. I'm really concerned, and I would like to see some numbers run on this bill that would, what happens if the current funding is plugged into the new formula? What happens to Minneapolis's total budget, and do the categorical lines break down differently? I was talking to Mary Ciccone from Parents United, and she had talked that they were looking for somebody maybe from Hamline University to run those numbers, because well, we all know what is going on, you know, in terms of economics, and I think I would like to be convinced about the equity of the formula changes in light of whether or not there is no new funding. And I very much appreciate the scaled aspects of the bill, and I think that that's greatly in its favor. But just wanted to put that out there and put that request out there. Thank you.
Ms. Bates. Mr. Hancock, and then followed by Mr. Bourgeois.
Well, my name is Alan Hancock. I'm running as a candidate for State Representative Seat 46B in Brooklyn Center. And as I talked to some of the couple of the superintendents in my school district area, I know they're really thankful for this bill and the relief that, especially in Brooklyn Center, where you haven't been able to pass any referendums recently. And in a couple of forums, I had candidate forums, and I've been trying to study this bill, but I don't have all the details. But I certainly hope that there's greater consideration for preschool funding, because I think this is one of the greatest return on the dollars in the education system, is to make sure before students get to the kindergarten level, they all have equal opportunity to be competitive at the kindergarten level. So that's just my comment. I hope that's put into the bill to ensure there's funding for that, and that we have the qualified teachers at that level too. Right now there's not as much control, I think, on preschool teachers. So that's my thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hancock. Chair Greiner, do you want to respond to that?
Thank you. I'm glad you brought up the preschool, and this comes up at most hearings, and I thought it wasn't going to come up here. I will just say that the Early Childhood Committee, this is the K-12 committee, but there is a Early Childhood Committee, and they are we call this the New Minnesota Miracle. They're working on a bill that they call the Dream Bill, and we very much want to put the two bills together, and the Senate does have an E-12 committee. So in the end, when we get to conference committee, it will be early childhood too. And thank you for that, because we feel strongly about it too. It's the cheapest, most moral way to close the achievement gap is to have preschool and early childhood.
Thank you, Chair Greiling. Mr. Bourgeois.
I just want to thank you guys for having this meeting here, and I had not intended to speak, so this might not come out right, but if you'll notice...
If you could just state your name briefly for the table.
Ed Bourgeois.
Thank you, sir.
And I work with physically impaired students here at South High School, and I wanted to make sure that that segment of the student population is recognized at this hearing. It says every child college ID, and we here at South are trying to do that, and I want to make sure that statewide the students that are physically impaired also get recognized as a great investment. The return for the dollar for students that are physically impaired is incredible. If they can become a functional part of the workforce instead of, for lack of a better phrase, wards of the state, their lives are better, the state's economy, everything works better if you invest in the well-being of the physically impaired students. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bourgeois was the last of the members of the public to sign up to speak. Is there anyone who would like to overcome their shyness? All right. Please, ma'am. This will be then the last speaker of the evening. Or at least I think this will be the last speaker of the evening. I've been corrected before. Please say your name for the tape.
Good evening. I'm Crystal Lett. I'm a parent of a child in the Minneapolis school system. I'd like to thank you for this initiative in attempting to save education in Minnesota. This is a very necessary and courageous move in this economic climate. Nevertheless, it is also a time of opportunity when we can all come together and hunker down and make sure that each child will learn the skills necessary to make for better economic prospects. I'm hopeful that with the support of the state legislature and the community who is convinced of the importance of education, that Minnesota will have a brighter future. Thank you.
Thank you. That does seem like a nice message to end on a brighter future for Minnesota. After the hearing concludes here briefly, there will be a video shown, brief, done by a Southwest high school student, Palbasha Siddiqui. Siddiq. I stand corrected. And it's a YouTube video that went viral in June, so we've got all the tricks up here. Thank you all for coming. With that, we stand adjourned.